We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Recovery Road, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm host Leah Mattinson, and thank you to each and every one of you from around this beautiful globe that has joined us for today's episode, whether you're tuning in as a podcast or you want to come over and watch the video version of our presentation today. You can do that by coming to masteryourlife.ca. I'm welcoming once again to the show, Dr. David Hardy. Dr. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah. Good to be back. I love this. So yeah, some important topics today. So
it is very important topics. And Dr. Dave is not just a naturopath, chiropractor or a functional neurologist, chiropractor, but he is also an educator and teacher. So for those of you who have missed sort of introductions to Dr. David Hardy on this show, I just want you to take a moment and write down his full name so that you can check out his program, The Hardy Brain, at thehardybrain.com. So,
.ca.
.ca. Oh, look at CID again. So write that down. So he, Dr. Dave and I are both .ca. So masteryourlife.ca, thehardybrain.ca. Thank you for that correction,
Absolutely.
Dave.
Absolutely.
So memory is not what we're talking about today. Today, what we're talking about is doctor-assisted suicide. And this is a really hot topic right now. I've been asked many times if I would write articles for this and do podcasts about it. And I've been really tentative about stepping into the water because, of course, it's a very dicey subject. But what I did feel like I could talk about now with ease and grace and certainty is that doctor-assisted suicide is around for what reason? Well, people must just feel awful. And right. When people feel awful, it's they want to take their lives. So whether that's physical pain, emotional pain, spiritual pain, whatever the pain is, things must have gotten so bad. Or caretakers also look at the people who they're taking care of and go, man, this is a lot of work. I hate to say that, but that's how people talk. And So what I thought is we're going to talk today about how do you actually get feeling better so that you don't feel like you want to take your own life. And that this is really an important subject matter. And so Dr. Dave is both the educational perspective and the chiropractic and functional neurology perspective to bring to the table to talk about this very complex issue. So thanks for being willing to dive in and talk about it. So what's your perspective on this whole?
My initial gut reaction is that if we're having this conversation, then I think we're doing a horrible job of taking care of patients. And especially ones that do have these chronic illnesses and everything else that, we do know that to some extent in a lot of these cases, it's going to be a progression of the disorder. And but what we're not talking about is how we can add quality of life or hopefully add quality of life during this and make it more sustainable for people and enjoyable for people that even if you see the system starting to decline, if you're able to see some gains in your function and improvement, it's going to improve your psychological and physical health as well. And I think we really need to start focusing on the quality of life aspect to it as well, instead of just hammering away at the bad side of all of this. And there's so many debates and holes right now in healthcare. And of course, it's more called sick care, and that we're just dealing with people as this pathology instead of a person. And of course, that's come out several times now in the media and everything else. And it is a complex topic. And I look at all these new kind of aspects of health and longevity and rejuvenation and all these aspects that have been thrown out there that haven't really started to hit mainstream yet. And that gives me hope that, yeah, we can start taking care of people better and helping people with these horrible disorders out instead of leaving them hopeless and kind of, yeah, just trugging along with whatever disability and increased decline that they have in their daily lives, which is obviously maddening to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you think there's really much difference between the person who chooses medically assisted suicide and the person who chooses to end their own life? Or do you think that sort of the mental health is in about the same state?
Mental health has got to be in about the same state. Maybe in people who make more of a quick gut decision around it, are once again going more based on that horrible emotional feeling they have. Whereas maybe people who are starting to gather more information about assisted suicide or kind of doing it more of a logical approach that, if I reach this stage, then I think it's probably going to be time for me to check out. And I think it kind of becomes that end of life plan that all of us need to kind of contemplate and start to think about. Goes well past what a will does and all of those kind of uncomfortable conversations is, when am I going to state that I'm kind of beyond care? And that becomes the topic. And then I guess the education piece needs to be behind that as well. Okay, well, there is, of course, in the neurology world, a huge debate on what is actual brain death and when does that happen? And then, of course, scaling it back from kind of that consciousness being taken away is, okay, at what level of consciousness does a person have? And that information is somewhat out there, but once again, it's very muddied and almost hidden from people instead of being discussed. So it's definitely a very, very complex topic that makes a lot of sense to start having. And then there's also this huge population now that are being nicknamed the elderly orphans. And these are people who haven't had children who basically become, when they're in a period of care, they don't have those family supports around them as well. And I think in those cases too, the topics become a lot more confusing and really need to be addressed as how we as a society support our elderly. Because family dynamics have changed so drastically and probably will continue to change drastically throughout the next decades as well.
Yeah. I want to talk about that a bit more because when I started this show, Master Your Life was supposed to be about insight, intelligence, and inspiration to live a better life, which was the fundamental crux of that is our ethos, our ethic, and our ethic meaning a Judeo-Christian ethic, not religious, but just the value of life. Life is important. Mm-hmm. That's actually, so this recent flash forward, now we're having conversations about really when do people decide they're going to either take their own life or die, the en masse suicides of kids.
Yes.
Young men, the increase in suicides is massive. And if you, wherever you live in the world, just Google it. Say, what is the suicide rate in the UK? What is the suicide rate in the US? You can even dial it in sometimes to as distinct as the state that you live in, or the, or suicide rates in Canada. And then take a look at what the age groups of people are that are actually choosing to do this act of harm, of self-harm. And the ethos, the ethic, I was really puzzling this out because I thought, why is it that I have gone, I would just would never choose that. So what's the fundamental reason I wouldn't choose it or think about it? And it really is this ethic of thou shall not kill. Because I was really thinking about it. Like, why do I actually have that running in the back of my mind all the time? Like it's, and so it's just something that is there. And present day, it's like people don't learn that. So it's like they're not, that's not even part of their educational construct or their moral development. And it's, again, it's not a religious thing. I was talking further with my mom about this because she has, you know, friends that are older and talking about how to, you know, what do they think about all this? And they're horrified that people would be choosing to take their own lives, of course. And one of them said this very wise line, and it's really helped me to stay stable. What she said is, God brought me into this world and God will take me out. I went, oh, yeah, that's what it is. That's the crux of it. That nails it. So it's like, as we're trying to scientifically figure out all this other stuff, we've got so far away from kind of like the whole, where did I come from? You know, conversation, that very first, where did I come from? And what did you think you came from? Like a Petri dish thing where some scientist was whipping you up? Or is there a divine hand at play that you're something unique and special and a spark that science can't explain? Science can't explain anything about your actual existence. They can't figure out why your heart starts beating like that. They don't have that figured out. They don't know. So people are lost, I think, even in their own. It's like, well.
Oh, big time. And this also goes into different stages, too, of this debate. And no one's going to argue that suicide is a horrible thing for people in a certain age bracket. Mm-hmm. Like we look at teen suicide and it's horrific. Yeah. And right there, it tells us, too, that the pressures of society, let's be honest, haven't gotten any worse. The pressures have always been there. Mm-hmm. It's maybe in our face more, but it used to be a lot more life and death type situations in different time periods. Whereas now it's more kind of social constraints, everything else around it. So I don't buy the debate that social pressures have immensely changed that would spike suicide rates in that age group. I think our health is declining in that age group and we're not doing anything about it. Mm-hmm. And that's the disgusting thing. Mm-hmm. And we need to take a lot better care of brain health and how people feel and process information. Because basically they've reached a threshold where they can't kind of physically or brain health wise handle that excess pressure that society throws on us. And let's also look at the social dynamics and construction as well. But we're missing the big piece of the puzzle there that, the population and the brain health and development is being pushed back years in these developmental milestones. They've even changed the whole milestone grading. And it's just madness.
And then
we go through, of course, later into life where, we aren't taking care of the elderly as well. And we need to kind of figure out ways there that quality of life is very important. And we go into this debate about God brought me into the world, God can take me out of the world. Well, we've also manipulated that around too. There's some people where medications have kind of kept them being, but the quality of life isn't there as well. Mm-hmm. So if they were out in the wild, would their death have come quicker. And that's a possibility as well. And these are all kind of debates and sides of this topic that can be thrown out there. Mm-hmm. And then we come into now kind of the future aspect of health, where we start to look at cell therapies. And basically, cell therapies are living life force, soon to be medicines. And of course, there's been ethical debates around that as well. And now, of course, most of those ethical debates have kind of been maneuvered around in ways that are ethical with these different therapies. But it basically comes down to, yeah, okay, is this new medicine something precious that influences and builds that life within a person? And then that also becomes exciting now as well. And I'm more optimistic than I am pessimistic on this topic, because yeah, I've got the knowledge and I've done some of the research on these new and upcoming therapies and everything else. And I'm hearing more and more about them, and excited that this can become more of a possibility. And yeah, we can improve the quality of people's lives. And we see this with the therapies that are out there now, and with brain injuries and everything else, where we start to see the life come back into people. And it's an amazing, amazing thing to see. Yeah. And I'm just so baffled why we can't do it with these struggling populations that need it the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so why do you think it is that we can't do it with the struggling populations that need it the most? Do you think it's, when you say that, do you mean why it isn't paid for? Or do you mean that people aren't aware of it?
It's both. Absolutely, it's both. So mm-hmm. systems are made to work with a system. Mm-hmm. And big bureaucracies are systems. And yeah, they maintain things. That's what they're supposed to do. But don't look at an established system mm-hmm. to come up with innovative new ways of doing things, because that goes against the system. Mm-hmm. And we're in one of those transition periods where the system we've got with health or sick care was designed to take care of people who were sick, because those were the diseases and the problems of that time. And yeah, if you were suffering and riddled with pain, then having something to come in and mask that pain is absolutely cutting edge. Mm-hmm. And it's built up from there. And it's now being pushed into so many different realms where other therapies and modalities and treatments would have worked better. And it's kind of at that crossroads where we've got kind of this backlog now of all these things that could be out there or that are kind of waiting to be developed more kind of market-wise, that are kind of waiting for something to happen. Mm-hmm. And what that is I'm not sure. I'm not, definitely not in that pay grade where I would have that information. But what I do know is that, yeah, there are a lot of things coming down the pipeline that look extremely promising and are starting to develop really good track records and efficacy that really are mind baffling, like, and good. And yeah, it's a matter of, well, how does the system make this transition, and how ugly or or smooth it can be? And it's probably going to be a rough ride in this initial phase where things come out. Disruption is not pretty, and we have to realize that these are basically some of the biggest businesses globally. Mm-hmm. And big business, once again, is a system that takes care of what's involved in that system. Mm-hmm. And it's a complicated, complicated economic piece that really, I'd say at this point in time, is interfering with people's health. And people know that. And there's a backlash to it. There's anger to it, especially among the populations that we've been talking about and the support groups around these populations that are now talking about assisted suicides because there's nothing out there to help them or get them better. And once again, that's a cop out of a system that hasn't helped these people.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And so what's the way for people to, well, I think as it was a real gift for me was being given a diagnosis of something that's incurable and don't come back until you're symptomatic. And I was like, what, what the heck is that about? Anyway, but I'm, you know, I was teaching stress management at the time or something to executives. So I was well tooled to actually take the news and do something with it differently. But because of that, and also probably being, you know, first family kind of thing to have microwaves and new tractors and, you know, buy VHS things. And like, if you're somebody who's like a first to entry person,
right,
then accepting or even looking for these kind of alternate paths to whatever it is that you want, whether it's your business or how you raise your family or how you take care of your health, these, you know, people who are investors, that kind of thing, like you're the first to kind of look at new things and really parcel it out and try it for yourself. So I was really fortunate to actually have that path. So I came across a lot and was offered a lot of different kinds of treatments, non-traditional treatments to maintain my health and well-being. And some of them were, you know, effective for me and some of them were not effective for me. And I think that's like speaks to why the big systems fail is because they're trying to apply a one size fits all to everything. Right. So,
right. Yeah. And that's how things are marketed as well. And that's right. A frustrating thing being more in this, I guess, termed holistic healthcare system where you're looking at systems is that it's not one symptom equals one cure type thing is it's complicated. And that's the other great thing, I guess, about technology and where we're going with AI is that there are different ways now of calculating multiple factors and variables. And that's been the problem in the research world forever is that research is basically trying to take 1,000 variables and people and boiling it down to one or maybe two. And if you get past that, your research becomes way too complicated and it's unlikely to be published type thing or finished. Right. Yes. Whereas what's being ignored is that clinician aspect as well, where you're taking you're taking one person, multiple variables and boiling it down to that one person. So it's kind of a different contrast between the two. And then of course, now, especially with what you mentioned in your own health journey, is that people have a lot of control over what they do and choices of things that will help them out. And some of those choices is doing it. Mm-hmm. And that becomes part of the puzzle as well. And that becomes very empowering to patients as well, is that now you're an active participant in your health versus being told and dictated, here's the plan. And
definitely. And so what are some of the new future of healthcare sort of tools or modalities that you've seen people arming themselves with that are when they're coming in to see you or in discussions and conversations that you think, wow, that'd be interesting to check out more about?
Yeah, the biggest is basically being able to track your own health and doing it in real time. And that becomes the most empowering thing, is because if you see it sliding back, then you're able to get back on track.
Let's talk about a really simple example of this. And so, because Dave was a former rugby player, Dr. Hardy was formerly a rugby player. So I'm going to bet that you actually had to track your fitness from a very young age in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. And a lot about fitness is basically how you feel and how you're competing against others. And basically trying to make that team or beat out other people on the team. Right. So that becomes basically that skill-based and performance aspect of it. And yeah, if you're an athlete, you see that all the time, because the brain and nervous system is basically two things. It's speed and accuracy. Right. And in the academic world, let's not fool ourselves, it's speed and accuracy. So everything in the human body is how precise things can get and then how quickly they work.
Yeah. And I know there's been so much pushback about this too, because I'm thinking back to elementary school, and I've got grandkids now, and the oldest one's just starting in kind of grade three. And because of the whole shenanigans fest with the COVID, I don't know if they've actually been to gym much, but it used to be when you went to gym that you would actually prepare for this standardized fitness test. And I hated it, like, because I couldn't do pull-ups to save my life or climb a rope or whatever the heck, push-ups. But it was like push-ups, sprinting or running of some kind, pull-ups, dips. Like just really basic stuff, but you needed to be able to do however many in order to earn like a gold badge or a silver level or whatever it was. And I was pretty fit, but I could never do pull-ups. So I could just never get the whatever it was, you know, the gold or the, whatever it was. And I was like, God, I just can't do that thing, but I physiologically am not wired for it. But I didn't have parents that went, well, then we should just throw that all out. And we shouldn't do any of it because you can't be successful at that. It was more like, well, what can you be successful at? Which is part of the problem now with tracking or trying anything, is that people, if you can't be successful at it, you don't want to do it. You don't want to participate. You don't want to compete in it. You don't want your kids to compete about anything, like all this bubble wrapping.
And so it does the wrong attitude for both physical and mental health.
Yeah.
It's the complete wrong attitude. And getting over challenges is part of the resiliency and mental health that we've ignored. Yeah. And then, of course, in physical health, challenges are what builds it. And it's the complete wrong mentality, and we've got to get so far away from it. And the whole mentality of that, if we're not good at it, it's not worth doing, is wrong, because some of the things we're horrible at are what we need to do the most to build ourselves better. Like I couldn't dance well. I didn't have rhythm. Well, actually, now that I'm in this world, I'm like, I need that musicality, and I need to build it, because this is a huge part of brain function and how things are in sync in these different areas. And it's something I struggled with. So I need to start picking that up and develop it before my system in those areas, the weaker areas, start to decline quicker. And then we go into the no pain, no gain mentality versus the no pain, no pain, like you've mentioned before. And I just got my functional genomics test done. So a little different than other DNA tests. This is actually, okay, how your genes are functioning, but what you can also do about it. And one of them was exercise tolerance. So looking at the genes that process all this. And one of the recommendations that they made for myself was that I should be doing more weight-bearing activities and less cardio.
So the bike riding needs to change a little, maybe, hey?
Yeah, doing Ironmans is probably not the best thing.
Right.
Doing them occasionally throughout my life, though, I would say are, because it pushed myself. But doing it daily for years would eventually start to break down my system. And it's right there in the DNA because, yeah, I don't process out these toxins as well. And I need that aspect where I can heal and recover. And that becomes exciting because then it's individualized as well. And instead of just looking at, okay, go to CrossFit or do high intensity exercises, that's not there for everyone, or do these ultra events. And some people are genetically gifted for different things.
Absolutely. And yes.
We need to identify those and also nurture it though along the way. And the great thing about today and with everything going on is there's so many options. And this comes back to that pillar of health where it's about the patient. And I don't even kind of like using the word patient in that term. I like to use the word people.
Right.
It's about people seeing these and then making these decisions for themselves around what I like to do, what makes me feel better, and what's going to be sustainable that I'm going to enjoy for my life.
Right.
And it's going to be dynamic. It's going to change. And that's part of it as well. So it's definitely exciting that these are more available. And we just need to look through all the distractions right now and concentrate on our own health as this starts to unfold.
So let's talk about that genomics test. So did you interview the person or the inventor of that?
Yes, I interviewed the CEO for a DNA company, Kashif Khan. So he's extremely knowledgeable. And he also had the health journey of getting sick. And he was in this facility where, office building, where below them they were producing something that gave off chemicals. And he found out that genetically, he didn't have the genes to process out chemicals like the rest, like his partner did. So his partner was fine and he's getting sick. And of course that goes into, well, what's wrong with you? Well, it's not what's wrong. It's genetically, he just didn't have the proper system to actually filter out some of these chemicals and toxins that were being produced. And there's a huge amount of that population that falls into that group. And so
what was the solution? Oh, he got out of it. Yes. So he didn't try to change the environment. Well, he got out of it.
You have to. And because he was completely null of that gene to actually process that.
Right. Oh, very cool. And so if people want to listen to that episode, they can go to the hardybrain.ca.
Yes.
Find your podcast.
Yes. Also Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcast. Yeah.
Right. So I know I always call you Dr. Dave. So people like Dr. Dave. So make sure that you put Dr. David Hardy. And that's H-A-R-D-Y. So you're spelling it right. So you can actually find the interview. And on that interviewer, is there a way for people to be able to order their own genomics test?
I'll add that link. Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. I think that people who are interested in finding out more about like what makes this body tick, what makes me tick, are the listeners of our podcast. So that's really great. It's a great tool. Yes, definitely. Yes. And so what do you, besides dropping the ultra marathons, What else? And you're taking some music lessons, or you're involving yourself in some playing right, music yeah. and some
we're listening to it and just enjoying it. And yeah, I'm doing it in a situation where I don't have eyes on me and don't feel self-conscious about it. But I'm also at a stage of life where I'm not self-conscious about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think too, making people feel, and especially kids, feel self-conscious about learning something is a horrible aspect of everything that's come out of this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, other things I'm doing is obviously nutritionally and supplement wise, that there's recommendations and suggestions on things that will help kind of detoxify the body and take some of these out as well. And yeah, I'll say then the top one is being glutathione for myself. And I think glutathione is really one of those supplements that has been undersold. And then, of course, there's kind of the precursors for glutathione, and then there's taking glutathione. And one's a lot cheaper than the other. But I find the taking the actual liposomal glutathione has been the top supplement for myself. Mm-hmm. And it might be different for you, and it will be different for people. Right. So yeah, getting these analytics done is very exciting, because then we can target things better, and you don't have to do all the guesswork that sometimes can be more and more dangerous.
Yes. Very hard to do. It's hard to do. I know when I got my genetic status there 14 years ago, I was looking at
right.
best thing for brain health. And because I was training at that time too, it's like going, what should I not be taking? And so there was things I shouldn't be that were part of my regular supplement regimen when I was training, but were absolutely counter to good brain health. Like to,
yes.
So I was like, okay, better get that stuff out. But it took a really long time and a lot of research and trying to understand my own body. And even having access to the scientific research was difficult, because I'm not a doctor. And so yeah. I would have to hire people who were doctors to try and get, you know, access to papers, because I really wanted to know like what was yes. not, what was harmful, and keep right. that out and just have the good stuff in. So people go, aren't you being a little extreme? I'm like, I'd rather do this than be crazy. So that's what's on my horizon. I'm not that interested, thanks. Yes, I'd rather be, yes, the opposite of that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London, where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
This is very empowering time, like the amount of time that I invested doing that and doing an assessment test. How long did it take for you to actually do the assessment? It's like a swab, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You spit in a tube.
You spit in a tube. Like, that's pretty fast unless you're dry.
Yeah, it's extremely easy. So and yeah, you talk about exponential technology, and genetics has been one of these where it becomes cheaper and cheaper, and that's exciting realm too, and especially that this is happening and it's not mainstream yet.
Right, and it's not mainstream yet.
And yes. it's cheap enough that you can spit in a tube and mail it off. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing the things that can happen and come out of all of this. Mm-hmm. And we even take something simple like heart rate and look at all the great technology that's come out with heart rate variability. And you now see like in these high competition sports, that a lot of these athletes during training will have a heart rate monitor on, and then also during games. And if it's not one of these stop start sports, it's great that they're using that technology for performance. Mm-hmm. And it really becomes now, okay, healthcare is about performance and quality. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole new realm. And it's been what alternative practitioners have been preaching for forever. Right. Yeah.
Come on over. And not that there isn't a place for allopathic medicine. I mean, if you're in a horrific vehicle accident, you don't want somebody who doesn't know how to sew your body back together doing that. You know, so it's good to have these things, you know, when we need them. But it's become so much the predominant, and because it's free, it's covered by most people's healthcare plan, you know. But man, you get down the rabbit hole of taking some really nasty medications and trying to get off that stuff. And like, there's this group delusion now too, that really is that everybody is unwell. Everybody's unhealthy. Everybody is. And so it's kind of like we used to, when I was doing executive coaching, teach people that you will be most like the five people that you hang around the most. So it's really important to actually tend that group of people. And that includes the people who you watch on TV or who you listen to, or like, et cetera, et cetera. So if they're all out of shape, encouraging you to do crappy things, encouraging you to continue have bad behavior, those are not necessarily, you know, the bright, shiny friends that you maybe want to have. It is this flip over of going, you know, looking at the people who are working in the healthcare field. How many of them are actually in reasonably decent shape? How many of them are actually really well? Like, some really high functioning surgeons will be in really good shape because the cost of them not being is, you know, astronomical, right? So they can't afford not to be, but many regular healthcare providers are really in horrible shape. And so again, that shouldn't be, it should be that you're looking for people who are encouraging you to be healthy and to understand your own health and wellness as deeply and nuanced as possible. Because to your point earlier, it's like your test will be different than anyone else's test because your DNA, you're like a snowflake. It's like you're the only one like you. And so these nuanced tests, and this is different than the 23andMe, which just shows kind of that you've got a propensity to have something in your family like type 2 diabetes. And then there's nothing given for how do you actually not have type 2 diabetes. You know, people will look at that test result and go, I have type 2 diabetes. And then like, and because it's genetic, I have it. It's here. I've got a reason to have it. That's not what we're talking about here.
genetic should never be the excuse of how you're living your life. Okay. And you're an amazing example of someone who's had the wrong genetic lottery, but has made the best out of everything else. And who knows what that horrible lottery ticket is down the road, because it might not come to fruition because of the way you're living your life, or not manifest in the way that it would with others. And that becomes once again, that empowering part. And we go back to those three pillars. So patient, I call it people, research and clinical experience. And doctors too, the ones that are frustrated with their system have said for a long time too, that people aspect hasn't been there. Mm-hmm. And now kind of these shifts too, it puts that ownership and collaboration back into the hands instead of in the market and incorporation side of things. So, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And there, yeah, there are some absolutely wonderful family doctors and doctors. So not, again, just not clanging the drum of that they're the bad guys and, you know, allopathic is the good guys, or not like the holistic are the good guys. It's this bridge of working together. I think that is, it's like everybody is trying to divide everybody, right? About everything. So again, it's like this inclusive, we're supposed to be looking at ourselves as who should I go and see for this particular thing that I'm feeling? You know, when I stretch my arms above my head and I do whatever, and I've got a crick in my neck, do I do some Qigong to get that out of here? Do I have to go and see a chiropractor to get it taken care of? Or is the pain in my neck because I owe $750,000 on a mortgage and I've been unemployed for 3 months? You know, so, so just understanding, you know, what your physiology is, and then who do you need to go to? So if in that scenario you said, well, I'm going to go to the doc and get a pill for that. You know, the, it's like, what do you, this is what we're encouraged to do though. And as opposed to going, gee, I wonder if there's some other way that I could move that pain out of my body, because pain is a huge reason why we do anything or why we don't do it. Right. Yeah. So it's going, what's the pain in my life? Where's the pain in my physical body? And where's the pain in my emotional self? And what can I do to move that? So it's in less pain, or if I'm going for pain, let it be intentional. And that I'm really trying to give myself a lot of pain here because there's going to be some growth and improvement. Like when you grow a business, for example. So you have a program for high performance managers and entrepreneurs to help them. And there is a lot of pain in entrepreneurship, like in the growth, right? And so it's like, but if you've got if your brain is not functioning or your neurological system isn't functioning well, it makes it harder to be successful. You know, so when people are talking with you from that entrepreneurial perspective, they can actually go with a bunch of tools that would not be in anyone else's tool case because of your life experience of being an educator and a self-experimenter, let's call it, you know, that you can actually speak to people about, I've tried this, I've tried that, maybe try this. Let's try to get some insight here for you about what's going on in your body. And so these tools, these testing things are really important, probably more important than the self-assessments of, you know, the 80s where we were all doing personality tests.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Everyone's still doing those. That's been around for years and years.
That gives you, once again, that insight into how you want to direct things. And kind of an offside, but still a relevant example of all this is one of the things in one of my my classes that I'm presenting on is basically how to subliminally hack yourself. Because we've all seen those movies from like Fight Club to that Will Smith movie. I'm blanking on the title, but basically where we've bombarded with these subliminal messages and it changes how we act and behave. And we all know this and it's all around us, but it's basically, well, okay, these are living examples of how people are manipulating how we perform and act. Why can't you do that for yourself? Mm-hmm. And, then it's you taking control about how you want to feel. And that's so important too, when you're trying to create something and or try to make these big changes. And you need to make all these subliminal messages for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's basically hacking these primitive pathways of the brain. And if you know these pathways, then you can start to make better informed decisions about the information that you put into your brain. And then, of course, it's going to change the output and how you feel.
Yeah. The future of healthcare is improving your frequency, improving your brain, improving the people who you hang around as a result of that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And taking out the option of here's the challenge is like, if you don't have the option of taking your own life, what can you make of it? What would you make of it?
You can make it beautiful.
You can make it beautiful. Exactly. Absolutely. So beautiful. That's such a beautiful life. That's what we're supposed to be here to do. We're out of time again, Dr. Dave. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and the tools that people can actually access. Do you have any final words?
Tune in. We're going to geek out about more of this, but it's continually learning about how the system works so that you can make those decisions and empower yourself.
Wonderful. Wonderfully said. We have so much fun. You should come and join us. Make sure you share these episodes with your friends and family, people who are struggling with their emotional and physical health. So people who are in pain, who might benefit from this. So pay it forward, everybody, today as you're listening to this podcast. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in from wherever it is you are on this beautiful planet. Love yourselves. Love each other. Mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.